And now, the Street Photography Magazine podcast with your host, Bob Patterson.
Welcome back to the Street Photography Magazine podcast. I'm Bob Patterson, publisher of Street Photography Magazine. And we have Bob Patefield with us today. I heard from him probably a couple years ago, and I've been wanting to get him on ever since because he had a very interesting story, and which I'm sure he's going to go into. I know he's going to go into it because I'm not going to let him off the line till he tells it. But Bob's located in Burnley in the UK, and he's retired, has a very interesting background, which I'll share with you. And so, Bob, thanks for being with us.
I'm absolutely honored to be invited. Thank you so much for getting me on.
Yeah, like I said, I wanted to have you on here for a couple of years, so we've finally got around to doing it. It's just, actually, he sent me an email and recommended a friend to be in the magazine. So it was nice of you. Thanks for that. Always like referrals. So I guess before we get into things, why don't you tell us about yourself and how you got into street photography?
Well, there's a story. So I guess when I was a kid, there was no real photographers around me other than my grandfather, who had a couple of Olympus rangefinder cameras. But I was never allowed anywhere near those. But he was a big fan of National Geographic as well. And I wasn't allowed near those either. But he obviously loved photography, and I was interested in his cameras, even though I only saw them from a distance. But my first experience really was similar to yours, Bob. I remember you talking about your first darkroom experience.
Mm-hmm.
My stepdad, when I was probably, I'm going to say 12-ish, showed me how to do a contact print using a medium format negative. And it was a portrait of him from the 50s, late 50s, with his hair all greased back and looking very cool. But anyway, like you, I saw that image developing in the developer and was absolutely blown away by that experience and the smell of the chemicals and the red light. And I just ended up doing print after print of this image till they were littering the house. And then it turned out he had a cheap Russian camera, Zorky 4. I don't know if you're aware of those cameras.
No, I had they're one like, too, but not yeah, that kind. Yeah.
They're like a copy, I think. So I learned how to use that and set myself a little dark room up. So then I moved on to getting a Saturday job so I could pay for film and chemicals. And then I saved up for an Olympus OM1, which was a V camera at the time. And I managed to do that after many months. I think I earned about £6 a week. And I think they were about £115 for the body at the time. So I was dedicated. And I think I had that for about 3 or 4 months before I could even afford a lens for it.
That must have been painful.
Oh, it was. It was. I did manage to borrow some lenses for a while. But so then, yeah, I think I did my first ever street shot. I've been going back through my images since we're doing this talk. And I think I did my first ever street shot with that camera when I was about 14. And it was, I went to Blackpool. You've probably heard of Blackpool, which is like a coastal resort in Lancashire. And I took a picture of a crowded swimming pool with a lifeguard looking over the people, which was really nice to discover that image again recently.
Oh, you did? Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I might have to share that one with you. In fact, I put it on my Flickr, so it's there to be seen. So that was pretty much it. I got a digital camera when we decided to go to Australia in 2000. And I think I first got interested in street photography after I'd been doing some dog photography, which I'd been reasonably successful at. I kind of won a competition or two. And then when I wanted to get into street photography, I thought I needed to change camera because I'd got a Nikon D3 at that point and it wasn't very good for stealthy street shots. So I ended up buying a Leica M9 when they came out, and I literally sold everything in the house that wasn't nailed down to get one, and decided then to go and do street photography for the very first time. And I think that's maybe where we need to go into another fun area of this discussion, because on my first trip out, I managed to get myself arrested by the police for the crime of street photography.
Oh, shame on you.
I know,
I've
a
seen
naughty terrorist.
the video.
So yeah, I filmed the interaction, and it actually, at the time, which was in 2009, it was quite a big story, probably because I had actually filmed it, and it was in a major newspaper and such like. But I haven't really talked about it since then until I knew I was coming to talk to you. So, because I was talking to you, I decided to make a video and put all the footage together, including the CCTV footage and the pictures, and even included the police interview. And I put that video up 3 days ago. And I've been absolutely blown away by the response. I don't know if you've seen, but there's been 21,000 views so
You're
far
kidding.
in 3 days.
Oh my, I haven't even seen the whole thing. I
Oh,
watched the
well.
beginning with those police officers sure were nice. Like
Well,
just nice young women, Of
they
course
were
they
kind
were.
of nice, but
At least the part I saw anyway. That's
I
before they
owned.
brought out the rubber hose or anything.
Well, I understand some people will think, well, why didn't I just give them my name? But, my dad had to fight in the Second World War to protect our freedoms. And I think our freedoms are a kind of a line in the sand that's always moving. And we have to protect those things, especially as photographers.
I
So
agree with you.
that's why I did what I did. I may do things different these days if the same thing happened, but I was kind of like, it was spur of the moment. I just did what felt right at the time. I just felt like we were being bullied. Obviously, I presume we'll link to the video so people can.
Yeah, we'll put it we'll definitely put it in the show notes so people can watch it. And you got 20 some thousand just
Yeah, in the last 3 days.
And that's just people finding it organically.
Yeah, I think it must have, the algorithms must have shown it to a lot of people, but
Yeah.
yeah, it's kind of been a bit crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Good for you. Good for you. So,
So that was my first introduction to street. Sorry to interrupt you.
no, keep going.
It was a baptism of fire for sure. I think I only took about four shots, and then I didn't pick up a camera for a couple of years after that
No kidding.
because of the experience, really.
Yeah, that would.
I did take the police to court. Well, we didn't actually get to court, but I started legal proceedings against them for what they did, and I did win.
Really? So what were you doing that just watching the video, they said you were acting like not suspiciously, but I forget what the term was, but what were you doing that caused them to think that? Just taking photographs on the street? I mean,
Well, the first thing that happened is we kind of entered this central area of the town, and there was Christmas celebrations going on, and there was a pipe band playing bagpipes, and I took a couple of shots, and we walked in front of these, like a police lady and what they call a PCSO, and we're kind of looking for another shot to take. And on the CCTV footage, you can see them kind of lock on to us. Now, that day there was there was a stand out in the street for the British National Party. And I think that's why they were there. They were just watching this stand to see if there was any kind of trouble as a result of them.
So tell us what the British National Party is.
Well, I don't know in great detail, but they have a reputation of being a kind of a bit right wing, maybe a little racist, but I don't truly know. Anyway, we just sort of, my friend wandered off to take a shot, and this police lady approached me and said, "Did your friend just take a picture of us?" Now, I don't think he did. He never said he did afterwards, and it's not the kind of thing he would have done, I don't believe, anyway. He was shooting slide film on that day, and I think it's about £1 a shot, so I don't think he was wasting any shots. And I said, "I don't know, he's over there, why not go ask him," kind of thing. I'm concentrating on my own shots. And she said, "Are you from the press?" To which I replied, "No." And she then wanders off to speak to my friend. So everything was about my friend at this point.
Oh.
It was nothing to do with me particularly. So she spoke to my friend. We then walked off and I took a couple of pictures of Father Christmas. And the next news, I'm being tapped on the shoulder by the PCSO. And that's where the footage starts, because I got the camera out of my bag.
Uh-huh.
And she started talking about terrorism and we need your details. And it just seemed ridiculous to me. So that's when I started filming. And then we were kind of stopped on three occasions, basically. I tried to, like, you know, if there'd been some kind of complaint about us or such, like, I'd have given me details without hesitation. But it just seemed like it started off as, "Oh, did your friend take a picture of us?" To then, you know, you're acting in an antisocial manner, I think is the term she was using.
That's it. Antisocial. That's like something they say to you in sixth grade.
Yeah.
Bobby's being antisocial.
Yeah, but again, it was all about my friend, and I was kind of felt like I needed to defend him a little bit. I had a little bit of knowledge about law, just a little bit. So I was kind of trying to get them to explain what their articulable suspicion was, which she seemed unable to do. So anyway, eventually we got stopped a third time. My friend gave his details because he kind of needed to for his work. It could have interfered with his work if he'd been arrested.
Oh, yeah.
And me being stubborn and not liking bullies, I just said no. So I ended up kind of having a nice experience in the cells for 8 hours.
Really? Eight
yeah,
hours?
8 hours.
Did they take your camera?
Yeah, he took my camera and he threw it across the van. Yeah.
A brand new M9, huh?
Yeah, it was brand new as well, yeah.
Oh. Did they damage it?
No, no.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He just threw it across onto the passenger seat, if you will.
Oh.
So, yeah, so I was released at 11, just after 11 at night, with like £11,000 worth of camera on my back, onto an industrial estate 6 miles away from my car on a Saturday night in the snow. So there you go. That was my first experience of street photography.
I know you said you sued them, but did you get charged with some type of criminal?
No, I was never charged for anything, but I was on what they call pre-charge bail.
Oh.
The thing is, with the police, this is my experience anyway, and I have respect for the police because I've worked with a lot of them in the past and there's some really good people.
Sure.
Yeah. These particular ones that I dealt with on the day weren't great. But when I was searched, I had, it's not pepper spray. You have pepper spray in the States, but we have something over here, which is called a criminal identifier. And basically it's just an inert substance that has smart water in it. So that if, let's say, somebody tried to take my camera off me, I could spray them with this stuff and then it would help the police identify them later. So it's perfectly like UK legal stuff. And when I was searched at the back of the van, the policeman found this on me, and he was kind of quite excited about it because he thought he was going to be able to pin something on me. And so I was released on pre-charge bail for 3 months for a firearms offence, which is a big deal in the UK. That carries a prison sentence.
Wow. And it's
Yeah.
just some colored water you were carrying
Yeah,
around.
basically coloured water, yeah.
Oh my God.
So, and that didn't put me off street photography, strangely enough. Did for a couple of years, but
Wow, that's a long time, especially you buy a brand new expensive camera and then you don't pick it up for 2 years.
yeah, I did sell it, unfortunately, because of that experience.
Wow.
Yeah, big mistake.
Yeah, they're still pretty pricey.
What, the M9?
Yeah. A
Yeah, I
friend of
must
mine
admit.
bought one about a year ago, I think he bought it. And he was going through different Leicas, seeing what he likes, and he always wanted to try the M9, so
Yeah, it made me realize just what how bad a photographer I was, that camera. It certainly stretches your abilities.
it takes some getting used to.
Yeah, I'd like to try a Leica again at some point before too long, but I'm kind of undecided which way to go. Q3, maybe a Q3 monochrome, maybe that'll be out soon. Yeah, I tend to shoot from the hip with the screen flipped
Oh
up,
yeah.
so that would be an issue with one of those, I think.
Yeah. I'd like to take a quick break to thank the Street Photography Magazine subscribers for your support. We couldn't do this without you. You may have noticed that we don't sell advertising or sponsorships in the podcast or inside Street Photography Magazine itself, and that's because we want to be completely objective about the work we publish and the services and gear that we cover. Our only constituent is you, our listeners and readers. So if you like what we're doing, you can support the show by subscribing to Street Photography Magazine. It's only $3.75 per month with a 1 year subscription, and you can do it by visiting streetphotographymagazine.com/subscribe. When I first, you first got on our radar, you told an interesting story about how you met I'm not gonna name names because you can do it when you tell us the story.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite photographers, one of my favorite people I've interviewed over the years, who unfortunately is no longer with us.
Yeah.
And you got to be good friends.
We
So,
did. We did.
and just the story you told, if you could share that with us,
Sure.
I think everybody would like it.
So the person we're talking to about is the great Glenn Capers,
Yeah.
who was your first. The first podcast you did was
That's
with him.
true. That's true. I had forgotten that it was the first podcast because we had been doing this interviewing people in the magazine for, a few years before that.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
I got a few of my dog pictures. Like, my dog pictures are a bit unusual because yeah, well, they're different because I taught myself photography and didn't learn any standard way of doing things. I think they stood out a little bit. So I managed to get some images accepted on to it was 1x.com, the website, like a
Oh
fine
yeah.
art photography website.
Yeah.
I ended up getting to a point where I had about 30 odd images accepted on there, and
Wow.
many of them were dog photography shots. And one day I got a message from this guy whose picture I'd commented on. In fact, I don't know if you've seen Glenn's shot of the Speedway motorcyclist with all the mud spraying up.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's a fab. I'll have to share some pictures with you because he used to send me all his shots and I've still got them. So, but yeah, he wanted to speak with me. So he asked me if I had Skype or something like that, and I did. So this one day, out of the blue, Skype starts ringing on my computer, and I'm thinking, oh no, what have I done? I've just given me contact details to some guy I don't even know. And anyway, as soon as the video came on, there was this larger than life character, just an amazing guy, full of happiness and laughter, and it was an incredible experience to get to know him. And I truly believe that I didn't really appreciate who he was and how good he was, and I just wish I'd paid more attention, let's say, to the things that he was teaching me. But we had many, many hours of conversation,
Did you
which
ever get together in person?
we didn't. We didn't. It was, we would, he would literally ring me in that when I'd finished work at like 4 o'clock, and we'd just connect, and my computer was in the kitchen, so it'd stay connected for hours, like 4 or 5 hours, and we'd just chat, and I'd make food, and And that happened for years.
Yeah, for those who aren't familiar with Glenn, he was an Associated Press photographer for many years, and he taught workshops, but his workshops tended to be very long, and he'd only have a few people. I can't see him making any money at it, but I guess they were quite an experience. I mean, and he did them all around the world, different places.
Yeah, I think he wanted to, well, because it allowed him to do it himself if he took a few people along and
Yeah.
taught them some stuff. And some amazing photographers have come out of him doing that as well, because you've interviewed Carla, for example, haven't you?
That's right.
So
That's
she
right,
used to go
Carla. She's
on,
fabulous. Yeah.
yeah, she used to go on his courses as well.
Yeah,
So yeah.
the yeah. So what'd you learn from him?
Oh, not
Photo
enough.
No.
Not enough. No. I think I was at a funny stage of my photography back then, because I wasn't just into street as such. I was still doing the dog photography thing. But what did I learn? That's a great question. Well, he's tried to teach me about dynamic range and just basic stuff like that. But it was more just him talking about his experiences. I really struggle to remember sometimes, because we talked earlier about how I'd had a few health issues, and that has affected my memory over the years a little bit. But it was just more, we talked about cameras and fun stuff, and he told me things about his childhood. I don't know if you know, his mum was a famous actress.
No. Who?
Virginia Capers, do you know the grandma out of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's his mum. Yeah, so he told me lots of things about that, his childhood. I don't think he even, I think his mum went away to Paris acting, or France, when he was very young, and he was raised by his grandparents for a number of years. And the first time he remembers her, I think he was tying his shoes, tying his shoelaces, and his mother had just arrived back and said to him, like, "You're tying your shoes wrong," or something. And he said something like, "You're not my mum." And she said, "Yes, I am." That was his first experience of his mum, I think.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
really something. I
It is.
Yeah, I wonder if he got to know Will Smith.
I think he communicated with him, because I think he told me his mum, Glenn's mum, won a Tony Award, and I think Will Smith wanted to buy that from him. So I
Really?
think they did have a little bit of back and forth about that.
Yeah.
That could be a made-up story. I have no idea if it's true,
Yeah,
but
okay. Yeah, I'm going to look into that. It's something.
yeah.
I really just I loved his work. And one of my all-time favorite projects or series is the one he did about the janitor
Yeah,
at the
Superman.
school. Yeah, the Superman story.
Yeah.
And for those listening who haven't seen it, and it is in the magazine, I'll have to put now I've got to have to put links to these, so people can see them.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they kept his Behance or whatever they call it account up. I don't know if it's still up or not, but it's got the full story in there. But took place in a school district in Central America, I think. I forget where in Central America, and the teachers were on strike, and they were very underpaid, not treated very well. And this gentleman was a janitor in one of the school buildings, and he wanted to support the teachers, and he dressed in a Superman suit everywhere. And
That's
Glenn
right, yeah.
followed him around, and he had all these photos of this guy just going through regular life, washing his dishes and cooking his food and wherever. But dude, they were just fabulous photos. It was such a bizarre story, and he just really brought it to life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anybody could have done it as well as him. I thought it was fascinating.
I love the shot of Superman repairing his Superman outfit with the needle and thread. Yeah.
I mean, it was just crazy. How do you find things like that?
Yeah, I think it's just his nature of his friendly nature. It just kind of endears himself to people, the Glenn, and could manage to work his way into their lives in a way that allowed him to take these photographs. I mean, that is what I did learn from him. It's all about story, really.
Yeah.
You know, what he
Gotcha.
does. I mean, the one that sticks with me most of his stories was I think you talked about it, about the lady who was dying in India.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
that
another one.
was just, oh, heart-wrenching.
It was sad, just so sad. And they just invited him right
Yeah.
in. And
Hard
I
to
think they,
imagine.
yeah, and I think they encouraged them to photograph
Yeah.
the passing of their mother.
Yeah, such a
And
private moment.
yeah, it's just,
Incredible.
yeah, and he did it with such care,
Yeah,
and you can
sensitivity.
sensitivity. Thank you. Thank you. I'm still waking up here. We're 5 hours apart. Yeah, finally back to work after the holidays. So we're recording this fairly early. But that's good.
Yeah.
That's
Well,
good.
I'm more awake because it's only like 1:30 here, something like that in the afternoon.
What kind of work have you been doing? You did a story for us. I think it was probably, or now I'm going to say in 23, maybe it was 22, about the people protesting the taxes. Was it property tax or some kind of tax?
Yeah, they call it council tax over
Yeah.
here. Yeah, the article's called Freedom Minded. The reason I did that article, it was because I'd had a long spell of not doing photography again, and I talked to you earlier about a guy I met in Michigan through a philosophy website. I'm really into philosophy, and I ended up talking to a guy called Adam. So shout out to Adam. He's a really become a really great friend, and he's probably one of very few people other than Glenn who has ever shown an interest in my photography. And it's through his encouragement that I decided to get myself out there again. And I thought a good way to kickstart that would be by getting those images out there and seeing if you guys would want to publish it. Because I knew the images were pretty good, and like the main photo I consider probably one of the best photos I've ever taken, because it's almost appears like a scene from a movie, or as if it's staged, or like a painting even. So yeah, basically what happened on the day, I was kind of interested in. There was something called the Free Man Movement back then, and it was people trying to, I guess, detach themselves from, how can I put it? They wanted to be more based in freedom in their lives, in their everyday lives, and not so much under government control. And a lot of these people seem to understand law very well, and they understood, this is my understanding, that when, let's say you go to court for, you've harmed somebody, that's considered a crime. So you have an injured party. But whereas statutory laws, which are like rules of society, rules of the government, are more civil matters and contract based. And those courts seem to operate differently to the criminal courts. So I think these people understood a bit of that, and they realized that if a judge is operating under their oath of office, then that would stop them from being able to enforce civil laws, if you will. I don't think I'm doing a very good job of explaining this, but it is quite complicated. So
That's okay. That's okay.
basically, they wanted to challenge the lawfulness of being taxed in that way. And the plan was that if the judge refused to acknowledge he was operating under his oath of office on that day, they were going to arrest him for treason.
Whoa.
And I believe that is what happened. I wasn't in the courtroom at the time.
okay.
There is some video footage on YouTube of it, but it's very, very phone footage was very poor in those days. But apparently the judge was arrested, and that just involved him being touched on the shoulder and saying, "You're under arrest." And I think they tried to do that, but police kind of jumped on whoever was doing that.
I
And
think they probably frown on touching judges while they're
I get that. But
in court.
it's, apparently this is all good, proper common law stuff. So the judge made his getaway, and then the stuff that you see in the images is what ensued. And the people outside, and I was one of those people, I was right at the front of the crowd wondering what was happening. The crowd were invited in. I kind of got washed in on a tide of people. And I just thought, what the heck is going on here? And just started shooting away and photographing everything that unfolded from that point on. And it's made quite a good story.
It is. It was a good story. It was well done and very interesting.
Yeah, it didn't get covered by the press. I sent the pictures to all the main papers and things, but they didn't seem to be interested in it for whatever reason, a bit too of a political hot potato, I think.
I don't know. I used to do that several years ago. Well, before I started the magazine, I'd shoot something that was going on and send it to like the local paper. When I was in Cleveland, we had, the big newspaper, the Plain Dealer, which covered the entire market, Northeast Ohio. And then I had like little community papers. So I'd send them to the community papers. All I heard was crickets,
Yeah, it's not good, is it?
And they were good shots too, if I say so
Yeah.
myself.
Well, I'd like to see some of those sometime.
Sure. Good. Somebody's interested.
Yeah, well, I did look, I looked through your Flickr stuff as well, and there were some good
My
shots on
Flickr.
there
Oh
I
my
really liked.
God. Yeah, I haven't posted the Flickr and I don't know how long. Hey, I should use it more often.
Yeah, it's quite a good.
Oh
I've only just started using it myself,
my.
and I quite like it.
We get we find a lot of good photographers through Flickr. Ashley's on it quite a
Yeah, I
lot.
looked at Ashley's stuff too. All good stuff.
Now Flickr's owned by SmugMug now, and which is, I think, a very good thing. I like them a lot.
Yeah.
That's where I have my personal website. That's probably why I don't use Flickr much, because, but whatever. I like them a lot too. I mean, I like the service, but
I
you can
was
only
very
do so
sorry, go
much.
ahead.
No, I just say, there's so many services now. You can only do so much.
Yeah.
and to take your time. But oh, anyway, I interrupted you. What were you going to
It's all
say?
right. I was just going to say, out of your shots, the ones that spring to mind was the quiet day at the barber shop. I like that shot a
Oh,
lot.
you like that?
Yeah.
That was quite an experience. I shot that in my hometown, a little town on the Ohio River called East Liverpool. Why would it be called East Liverpool when it's west of Liverpool? I won't tell you that right now, because
Yeah.
but I was there. I hadn't lived there since I was 17, but I was there on business, and just went out to do some street photography. And it
As you
was like
do.
5 o'clock, and nobody was there. And I walked by this barber shop, and the guy waves me in. He just wanted someone to talk to, and he had
Yeah.
the kitschiest place, had moose heads on the wall, and all kinds of crazy stuff. And so I shot all the stuff and him, and we were just talking. He knew who my dad was, a very small town, and I left, and I turned around, and he was just standing there, just with this look on his face, just staring off in the distance. And I grabbed that one real quick. That's been one of
Yeah,
my
I like it.
favorites.
I like it a
Good.
lot.
Good.
I know.
Sometimes I wish I framed it differently, but I'm glad it made no difference to you. But
No, it was good. It was good. And you, I liked your portraits as well of your the jazz pianist and the bass player.
yeah, I took those the same evening.
Yeah.
The pianist. I've started shooting our jazz scene here. I've been doing it for about a year now. I'm going to do a zine on it. I want to do like a
Yeah, that'd be
gallery
cool.
exhibit. Yeah, and we've got several places around town. This is a very artistic town I live in, and the musicians remind me a lot of photographers. They're really good. I mean, there's so many great photographers who, don't get enough attention,
Yeah.
which is one of the reasons our magazine exists. And these guys are just so talented, and I just like the way they work together, and they speak a common language, and especially that was taken during a big band practice. And I used to play a little piano, but I just don't understand all their terminology and the way they were interacting and working out how to do these songs was I found fascinating.
We need to
And
get together, Bob, because I used to play bass,
oh,
double
you
bass.
did?
Yeah, as a kid, I
Well,
played double bass.
yeah, I
It
wouldn't be
was
much fun to
10 times bigger than me at the time was the
play
bass.
with. My daughter plays bass, as a matter of
Oh,
fact.
cool.
And but yeah, I like the one, the guy, the pianist, his name is Bob Bonetta, and I had just happened to meet him. And he let me photograph him. We got to be friends, and he's introduced me to all these other musicians. And
Oh, great.
he was playing with that big band. He's invited me there, and they had this upright piano to save space, I guess. And that's what he was practicing on. And he was tired. He stood up, and he just kind of leaned on the piano. And I just grabbed the shot. I said, "Don't move." And it was one of my favorites of last year.
Yeah, I love it. I love it
Yeah,
for sure.
sorry, I'm talking about my stuff. Nobody cares
No,
about
that's
my stuff.
no,
They're
we do.
more
Of course we do. Yeah.
Well, before we started, you happened to mention Paul Reed, who we've had here several times. He must not live too far from you, I guess, in
Oh, I've forgotten where
Carlisle.
he said Carlisle. Yeah. It's
Carlisle,
a
yeah.
probably about an hour away, maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty close.
Yeah,
But
by your standards.
yeah, that's right. An hour, it's probably 20 miles, right? But
Yeah.
I just happened to watch him one of his videos last night, and I think it's if you didn't see it, I think it's real interesting what he it is like a first of the year thing. And he recommended you go through all your photos from last year, in our case it's 2023, and pick out your best. The ones
Yeah.
that are very best. And he said, do it in Lightroom and put a keyword in, and then send those off to get some cheap 4x6 prints. Don't even take the time to print them yourself, because they don't have to be good. And he had them, and he stuck them on a like a you know, a board of some type. And he said, and hang that up where you see it all the time, and you just look at it all the time. And after a while, some of them you're going to get sick of looking at. And he said, okay, those are ones you take down, and they're really not your best. And I thought, that's a great exercise.
Yeah, you get to see the which have the staying power.
Which has, yes, exactly, at least in your eyes. And so I'm going to do that. That's a project I'm going to do myself.
Yeah, it's a good
I might
idea.
even start to do it. I don't know how long it's going to take me to go through all those photos. Cause, but
Yeah, how many do you take in a year, would you say?
you know, I'm going to know later today because I'm going to use the filters in Photoshop, or not
Yeah.
Photoshop, in Lightroom. And it's a lot. I shoot, you know, I take too many photos, and that's.
Yeah. Well, since I started up again, I've been going out most days shooting. I've tried to make it a rule to get out every day if I can.
Yeah.
And there's only been odd days now where I haven't for quite a while. And I've had to buy a new drive for the images because they're just mounting up so much.
Yeah. Yeah, you buy that Q3, you're going to need three new drives. Those files are huge.
Yeah, maybe. It'll be worth it, I suppose.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, it's worth it. They all take up a lot of space, man. Yeah, I have to pay close attention to how much you're using up. So
Yeah, I think.
what do you shoot with now?
Well, I'm a budget photographer at the moment, so I've
Yeah.
been using a Panasonic Lumix GX9 because it's so good for street. It's a tiny little camera. And for quite a while, I was using just a kit lens that I bought secondhand, which was cost me about £100. I had quite a period of shooting 24 mil equivalent, all my street stuff, and now I've kind of gone on to shooting a like a 34, 35 equivalent. So with the GX9. So I would like to change it, but I'm really enjoying how that works for me. It's just so easy and light,
That's all that matters.
and suits the way I'm doing it.
Yeah, you know, they're all good. All the cameras are good now. Yeah, to me, it's important what it feels like.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a kinesthetic learner.
Yes, I think I'm the same.
Yeah. That's funny. In a visual art,
Yeah,
same
imagine.
thing. But takes me forever to buy a pair of shoes.
I'll join the club. I'm the same. I'm the same.
See? Look at that. And our names are similar too. Sorry, I'm moving away from the microphone. So, what are you working on? Are you shooting mainly street right now, or you've
Yeah.
got projects?
Yeah, I do pretty much street all the time. I've been doing like, thanks to one of your guests, I can't just remember his name, but you had a guy on who was doing like a 100 portrait project.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so I've thought, oh, I'll give that a go just to fire things up a bit. So I've been doing that. I've got about 100, I would say I've got about 60 so far. Again, they're on my Flickr. And some are candid and some are like posed portraits in the street in the local towns. I'm working on, I don't know whether you might want to have a look at this when I've finished it, but I've thought I would do Ethics of Street Photography.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm quite into philosophy and, you know, there's some question marks around whether street photography is ethical. Especially when it comes to, say, photographing kids or homeless people. But, like, that's an interesting gray area I'd like to work on, is because I've been doing a project now which is nearly finished, which I'm going to release. You'll probably be ready by the time this podcast goes out.
Okay, good.
But it's
Keep me
about,
posted.
yeah, it's about, well, it's to do with basically child abuse. I've been photographing episodes of child abuse in the street.
Oh,
Yeah, and
oh.
the idea is to raise awareness to that, and so that I can bring focus to peaceful parenting. That's the main goal with that. So, you know, when I'm talking about child abuse, I'm talking about in the sense of, yelling at kids, hitting kids, dragging kids around, or and there seems to be
Yeah,
more and
that's.
more of that going on in public these days. So there's a really good book coming out soon on peaceful parenting, and I'd like the project to coincide with that. I'm going to do a video with the pictures, the images, and it's kind of the video aims to show the progression from happy children through to abused children through to violence
Wow.
and war, if you will.
Wow. Yeah, I'd definitely like to
So,
see it.
yeah,
That's tough stuff.
it is tough stuff, but I think it's pretty important for where society seems to be heading. I think everything starts with parenting, and I think it's incredibly important that we learn to. I'm not a parent, so take my what I'm saying with a pinch of salt. But I've kind of got a theory a little bit around street photographers as well, which is that I think that street photographers potentially have had abusive childhoods, usually, which has made them hypervigilant and more inclined to be very observant of people and their behavior. And I kind of, there was an interview of, I'm just trying to remember his name. If you can bear with me 1 second. What is he called? Oh, he's a famous. Yeah, he's called Trevor Wisecup. He's a New York street photographer. And he was being interviewed on a video, and he was talking about something to do with photographing children. And I said in the comments, I mentioned something called the ACE score. And the ACE score is the adverse childhood experience. And I said that I had this theory that street photographers were had potentially high ACE scores. And Trevor Wisecup kindly responded. He did the ACE test and kindly responded and said that he outscored an 8 out of 10, which meant that he had had quite an abusive childhood. And then a couple of people commented under that and kind of confirmed what I was suggesting. So it would be really interesting if some street photographers might want to take the ACE test. You'll find it online quite easily. And see what you score out of 10, and see what your childhood was like, and whether that's had an impact on you becoming a street photographer.
That's interesting. ACE, it's spelled ACE.
Yeah, it's adverse childhood experiences.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of that.
So that's that project. And then the only other thing I really want to do, I guess, is finish off the portrait project. And not too sure what to do after that.
Well, I'm sure you'll find something. You know, there's so many potential stories out there.
Yeah.
So obviously you found some that most other people wouldn't have thought about.
Yeah, I think I'd like to do what Glenn was so good at and maybe find some longer form stories
Yeah.
to document. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I settled on the jazz thing. I wanted a long form project.
Yeah, is there anything else that you're thinking of doing, Bob?
I just want to get out in the streets more. I haven't been doing a lot of street photography myself. I live in a small town, and which is no excuse, but I use it anyway. But
Yeah.
you come from a big city, and I live in a small town now, which is a very cool place, but you tend to walk by the same places all the time. But I know I've got some travel coming up. I love to do travel photography,
Yeah.
and I try not to take on too many things because then it gets watered down. But once I start printing some of the jazz photos, and by the way, I'm sorry, I'm just kind of rambling here.
No, go for it.
I've got to expand my horizons in terms of the musicians. There's so many venues I haven't been to, and so many people I haven't shot yet. And this is a town of like 45,000 people,
Yeah.
or surrounding counties 150. So it's like 200,000, which is small.
Do
Still a
you
pretty
ever
small.
feel like you're suffering kind of photographer's block or anything like
So,
that, or is
oh
it?
yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And then sometimes it just goes away.
Why is that, do you think?
I think in my case, I think I just have to stop trying and just see more what's in front of me. And instead of pressing to get a good shot, oh, I've got to
Yeah.
come away with something good. I haven't
Yeah.
got it yet. Of course, you don't always get a good shot. You can go months without getting a decent shot. So,
I tend to find that when I kind of get into like a flow state when I'm doing my photography, if I just forget everything else and just
Yes.
get flowing with it, and it just kind of happens automatically after that. But like
Yeah.
the times that I've been felt blocked in the past, I think it's been because there are more pressing things in your mind to deal with, be that earning a living or, so dealing with your health issues or
Sure.
whatever it may be.
Yep.
So.
And I guess my probably one of my biggest blocks is I tend to compare myself to others. I always preach, don't do that, don't do that, but it's something I do. I probably can't help it. It might be an occupational hazard because I look at other people's photos all day long,
Yeah.
and many of them are a whole lot better than I am.
Well, when I first emailed you about the other photographer and you replied asking me on, I was pretty shocked about it because I didn't feel like, worthy enough to come on the show. So
Yeah, that's
I
true.
understand that. I kind of feel I'm only 10% of where I should be as a photographer, but I think that's a good thing. If you think you're good enough, then you're going to stop trying, aren't you? So
Yep. Like in business, the minute you think you're indispensable, you're not.
yeah,
So
it's
the
good to
minute,
have somewhere to aim.
absolutely. I've spent most of my adult life in the martial arts, and
Oh, cool.
our top sensei in my style, the top instructor, he says, I've got a whole thing chart up there about, what's a black belt, and one of them is a black belt is someone who sees a horizon, and once they reach it, what do they see? Another horizon,
Yeah,
because there's always something to learn,
there is.
and if you think you know it all, then that you're probably got nowhere else to go.
Think I've only just started. When I got into photography, I wasn't really looking at other photography stuff. I sort of, I guess I would call myself a hacker. I just got the camera and just made it up as I went along, which I think was useful at the time because it allowed me to do stuff that was different. But now I'm kind of more into it. I'm feeling like I need to start over again and learn from the beginning. So I think that's what I'll probably aim
Nothing wrong with going
towards
back to the
doing.
basics.
Yeah, so I've been obviously with coming on here, I've had to like, well, think about who influences are and who I like as photographers, and it's been very eye-opening and interesting. So,
Yeah, and there's so much. Problem is, there's probably too much information out there now
yeah.
with the internet and YouTube. There's a lot of great stuff on YouTube. Finding it can take some work.
Doesn't matter what subject you're into, there's always someone bigger, better, and stronger, isn't there?
Always, always. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question too about you're doing portraits, and I'm trying to do better with portraits. I love shooting portraits,
Yeah.
and so how do you make a good portrait, and you're doing them on the street. And I mean, like physically, what are you doing?
Well, initially, I'm looking for someone who looks interesting. So
Sure.
that's obviously the first thing. I like documenting people who are very characterful. It's usually older generation people, the kind of people who are disappearing from the world very rapidly. So one of my weaknesses is background in an image. So I'm trying to be mindful of that. But I'll pick someone interesting looking. Obviously, I'll speak to them, just say, hey, I'm doing a project, 100 portraits of Burnley people. How would you feel about me just taking your photo? And, I get told no now and again, but mostly people are very kind and they say yes. I've printed out like a name of the project and a link to so they can go and look at the picture.
Okay. Oh,
So
good idea. Yeah.
I just give them a little slip of paper and say, take a look at that. Your picture will be up there later. And it depends, really. I can do a very close-up face shot, or if the face is the most interesting thing, that's what I'll do. But if they're like interestingly dressed, I'll take a wider shot of them. But it tends to be just like whatever's going on in the moment, I adapt to that. So I don't really have a fixed plan as
Do you
to
move
how I
them
go about
around?
it.
Do you move
Yeah.
them around a lot or keep them where they are? Or...
Again, it depends. If there's somewhere that looks okay and the background's not too bad, I'll take it where they are. But I have moved people a little bit just so maybe there's something not quite like a bin in the background or something, I'll move them away from that. But I'd try not to mess with it too much, just try and get a fairly natural portrait in the environment.
Are you tending to shoot them at the same focal length and the same f-stop to
Yeah,
keep,
I do.
keep a similar style?
Yeah, I think so. But I tend to do things that are a bit more unusual. Like, for example, I've been shooting street lately. I moved from 24 mil to 35, and I've been shooting at f/2.8, which is kind of unusual for street, I guess. Especially because I'm always moving. I don't usually stop to get shots, so it's hard to lock on focus sometimes at that kind of depth of field.
For portrait, it's great, but
Yeah, exactly. So I've been doing the portraits at 2.8 as well, using the 35, because I only take one lens out with me usually, just to keep it simple. I
same
just
here.
think the more you have to swap and change with, the more likely you are to feel like, oh, should I be? And you're just spending time changing lenses rather than getting shots. So just
Yeah, I
zoom with
agree.
your feet.
I agree completely.
Yeah.
I've gone with people who just have like a backpack on their back with all this stuff and just
Yeah,
get
it just
caught
gets
up.
in the way, I think.
I've done that. I've done that. I've had like three lenses with me, and I keep thinking, I should probably put this other one on. Maybe this isn't the right one.
Yeah, if you remove that possibility, don't you? If you
You do.
just go out with the one, keep it simple, just move your feet to get you to where you need to be, and usually come back with some good stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. I've had a Fuji X100. I've been through all of them, I think, since it came out like 12 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was looking, doing a search in Lightroom, and I noticed I even wrote down what percent of my photos in the last 10 or 12 years were, and it was a very high percentage of were taken with that camera model.
Yeah.
Whether it's the newer one or the old one, because when you have that, it has a fixed lens, and that's all you have. That's all you take with you.
Exactly, yeah. I
Yeah,
think it's kind of liberating in a way.
it is. I think it's very liberating. I've got to ask you about this before we go, by the way. You're talking about you're doing dog photos. I'm a
Yeah.
dog. I'm a dog lover. I
Oh,
don't have
good.
one. But used to, you know, and my daughter has a dog, so we have her a lot. She's just a hoot. But what got you into dog photography, and how do you get them to how do you get them to do what you want, which you can't?
Yeah, well,
They're
that's
better
the
than
hard
cats.
bit. Yeah, they are. It's the hard bit, isn't it? Getting them to do what you want.
Yeah.
Well, I got into dog photography because I got a whippet.
Oh, you
I
do.
don't. Do you know
Yeah.
the breed of a whippet?
Yep.
Yeah. So we got a whippet, and that was when I first thought, oh, I really want a camera. I'd love to get some action shots. So, and I'd seen some photos from like a D set Nikon D70, and the D80 had been out a little bit, so I got a D80. And I soon realized that, yeah, I could get some good shots, but not really anything amazing. And the Nikon D3 was just coming out. So again, sold everything that wasn't nailed down to buy a D3. And this whippet can run at like 35 miles an hour, and she's tiny. So trying to track and get good shots was really, really hard. But the D3 really helped with that. So I just wanted to kind of document her life, get some good action shots. And so I used to get my wife to throw the ball for this dog, and I'd be like, click, 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 getting all the shots. And my wife would be getting sick of throwing the ball, and I'd be just some more, do another 10 throws or something like that. And so we ended up getting another whippet so that we could double my opportunities. And ended up, I think the pictures that really got me noticed were, I did some action shots of the whippets with a 20 mil lens. So I had to be super close to them. And I think it was only because they were my dogs that they trusted me not to collide with them or whatever, but they're literally running past me at within a few feet at 35 miles an hour, and I'm getting these kind of amazing contorted shots of them. I'm not sure if I've answered your question, Bob, but
No, so you're mainly photographing your own dogs. Okay.
yes.
I thought maybe you were photographing other people's
I
as
did do
well.
with a few people, yeah,
Yeah.
for sure. But mostly my own dogs. Yeah, there's a funny story about that as well. When I was taking the shots that were the Dog Photographer of the Year competition, I was getting my wife to throw a ball over a dry stone wall that had collapsed so that the dogs would kind of leap over the dry stone wall, if you will. And my wife isn't a very good shot. And I'm kind of led on the floor at the other side of the wall, ready to take the shots. And she threw missed through the ball. At least I think she missed through it. She might have been aiming towards me. I don't know. But yeah, one of the dogs jumped right over and slammed full on into my face
Oh
with
my
the
God.
camera and everything. So ended up with a D3 Micronium and a black eye for a while. Luckily, the dog was okay though. But that's just got some interesting shots from that one as she came over the wall.
One of the reasons I asked that is I just watched a video on YouTube. Have you ever watched the channel Walk Like Alice?
Yes, they're near me actually.
I know they photograph them Blackpool a lot,
Yeah.
and they did one at a dog show.
Yes.
But they weren't photographing the dog show. They were photographing the people working with the dogs before the show, and they had so many great images from that. You know, mainly people interacting with their dogs and connecting with them. And I go, wow, that would be a really nice project to do.
It is,
But
it's.
she's really, well, they're both really good photographers.
Yeah, they are for sure.
And he's very knowledgeable, has some great Lightroom techniques that I've learned from, but I highly recommend it. Well, you already watch it, but I'll tell everybody else, check out Walk Like Alice if you haven't seen
Yeah.
it before. A lot of they do a ton of street photography.
Yeah, they are
Good
very
stuff.
good.
Primarily monochrome, not always.
I think the dog show that they photographed was probably Blackpool Dog Show, and I have done some shots there myself as well
Oh, really?
because I love dogs and had dogs in the past. But whenever I get a chance to shoot a dog shot in the in when I'm doing street as well, I always take that opportunity because they just make for great shots and they're amazing characters usually. And I love the relationship between people and their dogs. The other day, I was in a local town, and I saw this guy's beautiful little dog, an old dog, and I grabbed a shot before I spoke to him, and then just said, "Do you mind if I take a few pictures of your dog?" And he was fine, and we got talking about the dog, and the dog wasn't very well. And in the end, I managed to get him to hold the dog, and I got a lovely portrait of him with his dog and such like. So he's always going to have a lovely image of his dog now because I sent it to him.
That's great.
Yeah. You
That's
can't
great.
beat those memories.
No, you can't. I photograph my daughter's dog a lot. I think I have more pictures of her than any human in the family.
What kind of dog is it, Bob?
She's a Wheaton Terrier,
Oh, they're
soft-coated Wheaton
lovely.
Terrier. They're really smart. They're very fast. They're stubborn as all hell.
Yeah.
But she's a sweetie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there. But yeah, what a character. What a personality. Anyway.
Anybody wants to see any of my dog photography, if they follow the link to the video of the arrest and then just look on the channel, I've got a couple of videos of
Oh,
images
good.
from the dogs.
Okay.
Their life stories, basically. They're both gone now, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the sad thing.
It is.
They don't live too long.
It got to 14 and 15, so I
That's
can't
good.
complain. Yeah, pretty
Yeah.
good.
Yeah, that's good. All right, Bob. Well, before we go here, I wonder if you could tell us where to find you. Find you online.
Yeah, I guess
And
if you
we'll
search.
put all the links, we'll put all the links in the show too.
Cool, thank you. Appreciate that. I don't have a website, so you can tell me off when I finish with this, but yeah, if you just search Bob Pitfield Flickr, you'll be able to find me on there. I am on 500px. I've not been using it so much lately, and it does have just a lot of my everyday stuff on there, but that's 500px.com/hotdogphotography. And that's about it. I'll maybe try and set a website up or something in the meantime before the show goes out.
Okay. Well, you're on Flickr, and that's that's as good as having a
Yeah.
website.
Yeah. Should be easy to find. Bob Pitfield
And
Flickr.
you spell it PATEFIELD.
That's it.
Make sure we find that. And of course, yeah, it'll be in the notes with the show too, so you can get them from there. And well, thanks, Bob. I really appreciate it. So good to finally meet you. And definitely, we need to keep in touch.
Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it. And I just want to thank you and Ashley and Russell for all the work you do over there. You do a great job at bringing we street photographers together, and we appreciate it very much.